Hello? Is this thing on? Oh, we're good? Okay, all right, let's go. It's Wednesday. That means it's time for the Farmer Forum, and we've got a lot of opinion coming our way with two past presidents of the National Corn Growers Association geared up and ready to go. But first, we've got some field business to check in on.
Live from even more scattered locations across the embattled Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Dr. Caitlin Bissonette, University of Missouri field crop pathologist. Then it's our Farmer Forum with Ken McCauley from Kansas and Darren Enan from South Dakota. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, how are you this morning, my brother? It's good to hear your voice.
It feels good today. I'm all over the place.
I hear you.
I'll be honest, I hate it when radio guys talk the way that I talk sometimes on the air. I have to be honest. So I'm sorry, America. I'm just so doggone excited, you know, to be in front of an open microphone to address the farming world and whoever else may be listening. We appreciate all 10 of you tuning in this morning.
Good morning, really do. Jim. Hi, Nick. Hello, Ted. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Bob. Don't forget Bob. Randy's out there, I'm sure.
I love it. All right. Hey, okay, so why the hello is this thing on?
Yes, clarify.
We are in a very unique situation here this morning. We're live, which is a credit to producers Joe Stackler and to John Harith for getting us on the air, because believe it or not, we are live and on the air, but there is nobody in the studio.
That's right. That's right. Nobody to push the buttons.
And that is because we have had a potential COVID exposure in the South Bend building that everyone is. So we're all working remotely. At this time, no Farm Journal employees have been impacted.
That's right.
There's some testing going on. Well, I'll say that, but that's only as a safeguard. Mm-hmm. That's as a safeguard. None of the Farm Journal employees are showing any symptoms. We just want to make sure that we've got a safe environment for everybody to work in there. So we're producing a live radio show with no one in the studio. It's challenging. It is not above or beyond Joe and John's capabilities. So we are live and on the air. Hopefully you, the listener, will not notice anything different about how the show is going.
And Chip, I've been talking about this the whole time. I mean, we are bringing the future forward. I think I coined that term, bringing the future forward. Pretty sure that was me that brought that up.
That was you? Go ahead. You take it. Love it. All right, man, let's get to the news.
Well, dude, our top story today, the U.S. State Department has ordered China to close its consulate in Houston, Texas. The order came just hours after Houston police and firefighters responded to reports that papers were being burned in open containers outside the Chinese consulate grounds. China responded by saying, quote, China urges the U.S. to immediately rescind its erroneous decision. Otherwise, China will undertake legitimate and necessary responses. U.S. State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas said the directive to close China's consulate had been made to protect American intellectual property and the private information of its citizens. Chip, this comes just after the U.S. Justice Department indicted two Chinese men yesterday on accusations of hacking dissidents, human rights activists, corporations, governments, and databases containing information related to COVID-19 vaccine research. Burning papers outside of your consulate doesn't seem like a good sign for cooling
relations. It's going to be a great scene in the movie, though, when we put this together. It will be a great scene in the movie. Evidently, I've been told that we should not label this a Cold War, but I don't know what else to call it. That's how it certainly feels. When we're nabbing their hackers and closing down consulates and they're burning documents in the backyard, it feels like a Cold War to me.
Well, maybe they were just trying to warm their hands, you know, if it is.
Well, it's Houston in July, so.
It is July. USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs Greg Ibach said the investigation into the cattle market after the August 2019 fire at a Holcomb, Kansas processing facility, and in light of market volatility related to COVID-19, Ibach told reporters his agency may take actions in light of the investigation's findings. While offering few details, Ibach said there will be a number of items uncovered in the investigation that both Congress and the industry will want to address. Chip.
Yeah, we are anxiously awaiting that. And RCAF put out a previously unreleased, I don't know how that works, study from 2014 about the 2009 cattle market and the impact of concentration. And it just all seems weird to me.
Yeah. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue says his agency is considering another round of CFAP payments, saying, quote, "We are in the process of evaluating the COVID-19 impacts on the ag economy and looking back at the lessons learned so far as we consider our second round of CFAP." Perdue said the agency is considering adding additional commodities to future relief packages, but pointed at China's increased purchases of U.S. ag goods, saying he does not believe another spate of market facilitation payments will be made, Chip.
I got a feeling that at some point in the future, the not too distant future, he's going to say, you know what, maybe there will be another round of MFPs.
And quickly, here's something to watch. According to Grain Export Association, ANEC, Brazil is expected to ship 8.8 million metric tons of soybeans in July based on vessel lineups. That would mark a 47% increase from July 2019. ANEC also forecasts Brazilian corn exports in July to reach 5.64 million metric tons. That's down slightly from last month's forecast. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of The Scoop. Margie, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
Hey, Chip. Doing well.
Good, good, good. So the number of complaints on dicamba in the state of Illinois off sharply from last year, right?
Yeah. Hey, and I'm going to throw in some kudos to our broadcast team as well, because they were able to push live my latest podcast interview for The Scoop. And I visited with Jean Payne. She's the president of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. And she's predicting that dicamba complaints in the state of Illinois will not top 100 for the year 2020. And that is a huge improvement, as in 2019, the state had over 700 complaints. So, you know, as of mid-July, just a couple weeks ago, the state had 70. And, you know, looking ahead and trying to forecast, she does not think that they will top 100. And Jean's crediting this to just a core focus on pesticide stewardship. She says professional applicators knew heading into this year that there was a dramatic room for improvement needed.
Yep.
And
yep.
Despite the curveballs of COVID, despite the curveballs of the Ninth Circuit court decision in early June, the professional applicators really stayed focused on being good stewards of that herbicide technology.
Right, right. You know, it while things are much improved from a year ago in Illinois, some of the other states, I mean, I keep hearing from Iowa that there's more complaints. Are you hearing that?
Yeah, Bob Hartzler just joked with us on Twitter. So, yes, there is a variant. State by state, as what we're hearing. And, you know, the best measuring stick we have on this are those complaints, and those complaints are filed with, you know, state departments of agriculture. So we'll be watching that data as it's coming in by those individual states.
Gotcha. Margie, thank you so much. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Chip.
All right. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. At Farmer Assist.
Solving the soil
Twitter.
Health puzzle? La Crosse Seed has you covered. Get started today at lacrosseseed.com/partner or call 800-356-SEED.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at #AgriTalk.
Ding.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Hey.
Say, yeah.
And speaking of Twitter, and the hashtag yes. AgriTalk. Did yes. I see you having a conversation with energy analyst Jordan Fife this morning about the weather or something like that?
Not about the weather. Not about the weather at all. About this great dad rap artist called Atmosphere that he had mentioned.
Oh!
Every day can be the best day. Do what you can right now. Don't hesitate. Yes, and he's right on. And I may have overestimated, by the way, the number of people listening. We've got Randy checking in. We've got the good Dr. Jim checking in. There may be more people working on the show than are actually listening right now, and I'm not sure that's the ratio that we're looking for. But thank you, guys. Thank you for checking in.
I love it. Yeah, no, I saw that conversation with Jordan, the mention of Atmosphere, and I just flashed back to the conversation with Elwood Taylor yesterday.
Yes,
and I thought, well, it's obviously about the weather.
No, it's hip-hop. It's hip-hop.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll explain it to you later. I'll make you a mix.
Maybe we should take this off the air. Yes. All right. Let's have a conversation right now with Dr. Caitlin Bissonette. She is from the University of Missouri, where she is a plant pathologist. She is also a leader of the Soybean Cyst Nematode SCN Coalition. She joins us right now. Caitlin, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Yeah, good to have me. And it's good to talk to you.
You bet.
Well.
Good. So, everything that is going on with the social distancing and everything, I'm curious, Caitlin, is it making life more difficult for a plant pathologist, or is it because you've got to go out and meet with farmers and talk about the issues that they're seeing in their fields, right?
Yeah, we're still able to make field calls and talk with farmers. Out in an open field, it's a little bit different than if you're confined to a classroom kind of setting. So it's a little bit has changed as far as travel restrictions, but not a lot has changed as far as being able to go out and actually look at things in the field.
Good. So if I'm a farmer in northern Missouri and I've got a problem that I can't identify, I should not hesitate. Go ahead and make the phone call and get somebody out there.
Exactly. MU Extension is still fully operational. We're still making field calls and able to come help whenever.
Yeah, good. Okay, SCN, the SCN Coalition, the battle against the little buggers. How's it going? Are we making any progress?
We're making some progress, especially on the genetics front. There's new resistance available on the market coming 2021. Through Syngenta, a new variety in some maturity groups. There's seed treatments on the market that have come this year. So there's some progress being made, new tools in the toolkit.
You know, that variety selection for the resistance, that has been one of the best tools to use against SCN, right?
Exactly. That's our first line of defense and battling soybean cyst nematode.
Yeah, why is that? Is it because it's just so difficult to chemically control them, I guess? Is that the right way of saying it?
For most pathogens, the first line of defense really is resistance. Because if you stop the pathogen from being able to reproduce as much in the first place, the less we have to use chemicals. And we want to reduce our chemical use overall anyways. That's better stewardship.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. So what's the next step that we need to take to control that negative influence of SCN on our bean crop?
Well, really the next step is understanding how we're managing it and how to keep our levels down, right? We have to start from somewhere. A lot of fields, especially in Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, have soybean cyst nematode in them, and we have to get that baseline, and we have to manage those populations down. And it starts with resistance, rotating crops, and sometimes using seed treatments in that mix to bring those population levels down. But you don't necessarily know always if you have soybean cyst nematode in your field, and you can really easily go out in your field and check this time of year. Real simple, go dig up a couple plants, and look for females on the roots.
Caitlin, it sounds like we may have lost Chip Davis Michelson here.
Yeah.
So you were talking about, so, okay, you say dig up the plants, look at the roots. Help me out here. What would I be looking for then? What does that look like?
So if you're digging up the plants, what you want to do is you want to take a shovel or a spade. You don't want to just rip the plants out of the ground because all the females are going to fall off. Mm-hmm. So once you dig those plants off, you gently shake off the soil, and you'll find small white dots on the roots that are about 1/5 to 1/10 the size of a nodule. And those are going to be the females on the roots. Mm-hmm. And on resistant soybeans, you may not find many, but that's an indicator that you have soybean cyst nematode in the field. Just because you don't find any doesn't mean you don't have soybean cyst nematode. So the next step beyond that would be to collect soil in the fall and get a soybean cyst nematode test at a local testing lab.
Okay, and let's say I'm complacent and I figure, you know what, this kind of thing happens to the other guy, never happens to me, I don't even need to check. What's my level of risk here? What's the end result? What can happen?
Well, the biggest thing is a lot of the issue with soybean cyst nematode is you may not have symptoms of soybean cyst nematode in your field, but you could be losing as much as 30% of your yield without even knowing it.
Okay. Okay. Very good.
And that's a lot of money in your pocketbook.
What other hidden dangers are there out there that that we might not be thinking of that you would want to bring to our attention?
Well, there are other diseases that interact with soybean cyst nematode, like sudden death syndrome. In places like Iowa northward, iron chlorosis deficiency, iron deficiency chlorosis that can be related to soybean cyst nematode. So those areas of the field that might have other symptoms of other problems can be related to soybean cyst nematode as well. So those are things to keep in mind as you're monitoring your own fields, your yield monitors. Also, in areas that flooded, especially last year, like in Nebraska and Missouri especially, we had a lot of fields that just flooded and stayed flooded for a while.
Right.
Soil moves. So right. does the nematode.
Yeah. Hey, I'm back.
All right.
Hi, Caitlin. Sorry about that. Hey, I was having a conversation all to myself there for a little bit, even though I got kicked off. Hey, Caitlin, did you talk about what we should be scouting for right now? Because that's so important to understand just how serious your problem is.
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about looking for females on the roots in the soil and going and digging up plants and looking for those little white females on the roots that are about 1/5 to 1/10 the size of a nodule at this time of year. And just because you don't see them doesn't mean you don't have soybean cyst nematode. So that next step is to get that soil test in the fall.
Right. Okay. Real quick, for those that haven't had to deal with it with SCN in the past, when you get it into a field, what kind of damage are you looking at to your soybean crop? I mean, what kind of yield loss potential is there?
Well, I mentioned a little bit, just in the absence of symptoms, you can have as much as 30% yield loss. And so that's a big issue. I mean, by the time you have symptoms, those numbers go through the roof.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What else are you noticing up there, down there in Missouri this year, Caitlin?
Well, this year we've had some drier conditions in the middle of the season, and dry conditions favor SCN reproduction, so that's something to keep in mind. We have 3 to 6 generations of soybean cyst nematode every year in Missouri, and as you go farther north, the number of generations shortens. So in places like Iowa, it may be 3 to 5, and up in North Dakota, it may be 2 to 4. But that's number of generations per season, so that's exponential increase of nematodes in the soil. And dry seasons will increase that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Okay. All right, Caitlin, thank you so much for making time. We got to keep up this effort because it is something that is controllable. We got to put in the time and the effort on this, right?
Yes, yes, we do. And there's new tools, and we just got to utilize those and keep our populations down. And you can always find more information about soybean cyst nematode and the SCN Coalition at thescncoalition.com.
Thescncoalition.com. It's a great resource. I've gone there and looked at, tried to educate myself there a little bit, and it's an excellent resource. Caitlin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That is Dr. Caitlin Bissonette, University of Missouri plant pathologist and a leader of the SCN Coalition. We've got the Farmer Forum next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, not a lot of movement in the grains today, but at least we've got corn and wheat going in the right direction.
Right, Chip. You know, the corn market faced pressure the first 2 days this week, and we're seeing a little bit of corrective buying this morning. Some of that's coming on spillover from the wheat market. It was up yesterday on some corrective buying and with follow-through this morning. So wheat's leading the charge. Corn is following. Soybean market, not so much, and that's despite daily sales to China and unknown this morning. And that's 7 days in a row that there have been daily soybean sales either to China and or unknown destinations. And so a lot of demand in the soybean market, but just no price response this morning.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a little disappointing or not, because it feels like the bean market may have traded that demand earlier.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of that, let's be honest, the exporters, they know the business is happening. Yep. And it kind of leaks its way through. So probably not, you know, like you said, it's not a surprise, and it's factored in already.
Absolutely. You know, hogs had a good day yesterday, setting back a little bit today.
Well, you know, they started out okay, and we still have the August trading higher, but the deferred months have backed off, and so a little bit disappointing price performance so far based on how things started out. But, you know, I guess that's kind of a market that's waiting on the cash, where we've extended out in front of the cash a little bit here, and we need the cash market to catch up some. And a similar situation in the cattle. They're under some pressure this morning, but still waiting on that cash market to catch up. And so that's something to watch as we progress through the week.
Yeah, a little bit of pressure there on the live cattle. Some mixed trade going on in feeder cattle. Thank you, Brian. That is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
We've got some great sponsors of ACAM, America's Conservation Ag Movement, Trust in Food, Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, NCGA, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, The Nature Conservancy, and Valent. They are proud sponsors of the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. Let's go ahead and get this thing started. We've got Ken McCauley from Northeast Kansas on the line with us. Ken, it's good to talk with you. How are you, buddy?
Doing good, Chip. Good to be here. Oh, it's a hot, steamy day, but tell you what, you can't beat a hot, steamy day with water and moisture in the ground under this corn and soybean crop. It's really taking advantage of it.
Yeah, it sounds like things are really looking pretty good in your area, but at the same time, Ken, it feels like you don't have to go too far west of you, and you get into an area that was earlier getting pretty doggone dry.
Yeah, it really is. I had a meeting with some of the guys around the state, and it's pretty dry, not too far west, but they've had some rain too, but. You know, it's pretty dicey when you get to the western half. I mean, they need a rain, you know, pretty regular to keep everything looking good. But yeah. You know, they're better than they have been in the past. But still, we like to keep things growing good.
Yeah, absolutely. We've also got Darren Enan, another past president of the National Corn Growers Association, on the line with us. Darren, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah.
Listening to Ken can talk about the weather. We're kind of the opposite. I mean, stuff looks fantastic, but we're in dire need of some rain. Southeast South Dakota, Northwest Iowa has been missing it. And, you know, we got just a few days left of subswell, and then it's going to really start showing up. But, you know, we are in July, and it's supposed to be cooler and better chances of rain next week for us. So hope that's true.
Okay, good. You know, Darren, when we were getting ready for the conversation, I was thinking about last summer when you were on the Farmer Forum and we were having a conversation. The biggest topic was the infrastructure that you guys were dealing with up there, the roads, the culverts, the bridges, because of the flooding and the and everything that you were dealing with. What's the situation this year? How close are you to normal on being able to move around the countryside and tend to your crops?
Well, we're back to normal. The roads, okay. You know, were fixed in the summer. Then we flooded even worse last fall in September, which a lot of people don't realize. But it didn't cut the roads out last fall. The bridges we had out, they did get those replaced. I think we had a little congressional help to get those moved to the top of the list, which we greatly appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, last year we never got an acre planted. This year we virtually got everything except for a few low spots that we're still struggling with just to get some irrigators through them so we can water the high ground. But it's a normal year for us, the way it seems.
Good. That feels a whole lot better. Sounds a whole lot better than what you guys were dealing with a year ago right now. Okay.
Yes.
Before we talk trade policy and everything, Darren, I know you're a hog producer too. I got to get an update on what your situation is. Have you been able to keep up with marketings? What's the situation for you?
Well, we've been behind. We've got three separate sites that are at different ages, and the first site was about 5 weeks behind. And so with the changing of the rash and just to slow the growth down, that caused some issues. Now our second site, we're just emptying that, and that's a little more back to normal. The hogs are bigger than we'd like. We are able to move them. And then, you know, when we talk to the packers, it sounds like they're running maybe 75%. Which, you know, if you got a fourth of them that aren't producing meat, you know, that's a lot of hogs that are going to get stacked up somewhere along the way here.
Yeah, they're talking about there being 2 million hogs backed up. It's not quite a week's worth of a kill, but it's such a, I mean, it's a mountain of hogs that we've got to work through that are ready to be processed, and we just we can't get it done yet. There just isn't space because we keep feeding it from the bottom side too. The, you know, hogs that are on a schedule are still coming into the system. I don't know how we get out from underneath this, Darren.
No, it's going to take some time. And, you know, even on our farm, you know, they talk about euthanizations. We did euthanize some equivalent to a pot load, which is 160 head, which is, yeah. You know, that's just me, a small producer, I would say. And so that, you know, there's challenges out there, and it's going to take at least 6 months maybe to get the backlog. That is if things stay normal and the way the media is talking about COVID, you know, I don't know if we're going to be normal yet in six months. I mean, not 6 weeks, 6 months.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Ken, when we talk about, you know, these animals on feed and 2 million market-ready hogs backed up and all the issues, there's some similar, I wouldn't say that they're as significant, but there's some similar issues in the beef feedlot markets too. But the question then becomes, how quickly can we use up this crop that we've got in the bin and that we've got growing in the field? Because if any disruption on the feeding side is a problem that we're going to be dealing with down the road again, right?
Well, it really is, Chip. And, you know, one thing just to add on to Darren, friends in the cattle business, and if this actually helps the small packer, the guys we talk about, we want to know where our beef is. If the law changes enough that you can actually help these small packers, I think that would help a lot. And it actually, you know, moves things back to local where a lot of consumers are acting like they want. But yeah, the big deal down the road here is, are they going to remember that when they, you know, oh, I don't want to pay any more than I have to, and then I don't want to drive over there to go get the meat. And I think that for consumers, it's been yelling a lot about wanting what they want, needs to stick with that plan, and it will help everybody. So, you know, it sort of gets back to your question of, you know, how are we going to get rid of this corn? But maybe some of these other things gets things back to the way it used to be. And that would be one, you know, bright spot in what's all happened here. But, you know, looking at the corn crop, we've got a lot of corn to get through and been asking around, and Brad and I have been talking, and gee whiz, what are we going to do with this corn when the elevators are, you know, half full, or a lot of them got a lot of corn left from last year? But it's perplexing to think about, you know, how are we going to manage all this stuff, let alone make any money?
Yeah. You know, Darren, you're probably not in the same situation up there just because you didn't have the bushels from last year, right?
Right. We were way short on bushels. Our county had the most prevent plant acres in the nation. And, jeez, our, you know, but because of that, you know, our ethanol plant closed in March, right after the driving, you know, really slow gas demand slowed down. So our ethanol plant is closed and is still closed. And so the guys that did have some corn on storage, you know, they're trying to move it. They're taking a beating on price just because we lost a 100 million gallon ethanol plant for demand. And so, yeah, it's, you know, we're sitting empty, but, you know, we're going to have the bushels. But again, if there's no price, those bushels, yeah, they help, but we still need a price.
Yeah. Yeah, we still need a price. And needing the price and needing to generate the revenue from the market rather than from these government outlays, Ken, this is a topic that it's one of the topics that keeps me up at night. How do we get back to where we're getting the revenue from the market rather than from government outlays?
Well, we've got to work the system, Chip. That's the way we got out of the 80s, and it might be another one of those years. It might be two of those years. Think about what are we going to be talking about a year from now on this show? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, these programs that are coming our way, we can say we want the market, but the market isn't there, so we've got to take advantage of everything that's out there. And, you know, in the 80s, that's the way it worked. So, you know, you just got to bone up and figure out, you know, if you don't have storage, how are you going to do it? If you do have storage, make sure that, you know, take advantage of the best basis you got, and, you know, don't let everything influence you from the wrong side, because there are some paths to where you can make pretty good money. It just might be in a different way than we'd like.
Yeah. And now go back a couple of weeks, because I wasn't on the Farmer Forum last week. I'm sorry, on the Free For All last week. But the week before, with Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney, we brought up the fact that we are being asked about the potential for some supply side management to work its way back into farm program policy, Darren. It's kind of a scary potential, isn't it?
It is. You know, we've advocated for years not to do that. You know, let supply and demand work. And if it does go down that path, you know, once again, you've got outside influences regulating how we produce. And usually those ones that are pushing those ideas or trying to regulate us have no idea how agriculture works. And that's the scary part, is what are we going to get into when we're being regulated by folks that have never seen a cornfield or a hog barn?
Yeah. Yeah. Ken, I mean, odds are increasing that we're going to reopen this farm bill. You realize that, right?
I do. And it scares me to death, because we've made all of our plans for the next several years on how this is going to work. And, you know, that will disrupt these plans, I think, big time. I really am scared of opening the farm bill, because the people that Darren just talked about are going to use it to get their way on how we change how we do things. And that, to me, that's the scary part, along with the fact that we've got all these protections in here for a reason. And, you know, you've got to look at, you know, where's the bottom to this? Because once you lose those support levels, you just don't know where things are going to go. So I'm adamantly opposed to open any part of the farm bill or the RFP.
You know what? When we come back on the Farmer Forum with Darren Enan from South Dakota and Ken McCauley from Kansas, we're going to stay on this track. And I want to talk about some of the comments from House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson. That's next on AgriTalk.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, and thank you to America's Conservation Ag Movement, ACAM, for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. So we've got ACAM. We've talked about USDA, NRCS. We've talked about SCN. A lot of acronyms out there right now, isn't there, Ken, that we need to keep track of and everything that's going on?
Oh, my. I was just thinking about that. Yes, this morning even, that, you know, we've got the, you've got so many new and old acronyms. It's interesting to me. You got PLC, God forbid we have the LDP, MFP, CODA, COVID, the CFAP, RMA. You got all these acronyms, and a person from the outside that's not, you know, that does isn't in tune with what's going on as far as agriculture, you know, they think, good grief, what's these guys doing? Just milking everything the government's got? Well, think about how we've been affected by this, and a lot of these do relate to the Farm Bill, even though they haven't been totally involved. But I really think that some of these things that we've got as support levels because of the COVID and the China trade deals and the lack of driving with the ethanol business have been huge benefits to us, and they've all been deserved because of the things we've had to put up with.
That's interesting. And you know, when we talk about implementing the programs out there, a lot of the funding has come from the CCC. There's another acronym for you. The Commodity Credit Corporation has come from the CCC, and the funding for that CCC has been, it's been debated. There's been some conversation about just how much it should be funded. And Peterson is involved. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson has been involved in that conversation about funding of the CCC, and it's because he's not saying that the payment shouldn't be made. What I think what he's looking for, Darren, is more oversight on the payments. He's looking for the House Ag Committee and the Senate Ag Committee to have more say in how those funds are being delivered to farmers. And I don't have a problem with that. Do you?
No, I think if they do it right, which Washington, D.C. doesn't do very much right, the way it seems, but if they do it right, it should go to the growers or the producers that need it and not into some of these other areas that might qualify for it but don't really need it. So that's the challenge, is how do we hold Congress accountable on getting it to where it needs, but yet we got to be accountable ourselves so that we're just not taking advantage of programs that weren't designed for us that are out there.
Go ahead, Ken.
Chip, I got a lot of respect for Chairman Peterson. He's done a good job. I've worked with him several times, and he's always been fair. One of the comments, though, has been that this is just, it's been political, and once you get that into the committees, I think you'd lose a lot of the instant delivery that we got. And I've said that several times, and it's really the case. So I think, you know, it's important for him to make those comments. But the other part of it is we wouldn't have any money in our pocket yet if it would have turned into both committees and Congress.
Wow. You know, and now here we are talking about the next level or the next round of COVID relief payments. Jim Wiesmeyer's got another update out there. They are talking. And, you know, it the political side of it, Ken, it seems strange to me that we've got Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin negotiating with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi over it rather than having the two parties trying to get together and work out exactly what it should be. Treasury Secretary and the Speaker doing the negotiating or having the conversation seems weird, doesn't it, guys?
It's really different than it used to be, that's for sure. And Speaker Pelosi has definitely elevated her position. That's no doubt about that. But, you know, I still say that if, you know, the new CARES Act, whatever it's going to be called, we're talking $1 trillion this morning. And, you know, we used to talk about billions as a big deal, but good grief, this is a lot of money being thrown around.
It really is. It really is. Ken, you asked a question earlier. What are we going to be talking about a year from now? I'm going to put just a slight spin on it, and I'm going to ask you, what do you hope we're going to be talking about a year from now?
Well, I hope we're talking about a relief and looking down the road at markets that are improving and get better demand, which could happen. We could get through this and driving start picking up. The problem with the driving picking up is we all know that mileage is getting better. Electricity in the automobiles is gaining a lot more popularity than we thought it would. We knew it was coming. But, you know, if we're talking a year from now, I think we're still going to be talking about too much corn, but maybe not quite as much as we have today. And, you know, that the government is on our side like it has been. And we can have a lot of things to look forward to down the road for our kids to have some optimism. And right now they've got some, but it's all headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Darren, I'm going to change it up on you now. What are you afraid that we will still be talking about a year from now?
Well, from, you know, Ken talked about the grain side. I'll talk about the livestock side. The big thing is activists. And, you know, these impossible meat campaigns, you know, I think as a livestock producer, we've got to have demand and we've got to have exports. I know some folks aren't happy we're exporting because there's shortages in the grocery store. But, yeah, we've got to move this meat to whoever's willing to buy. And so that's what I think is from the livestock side. If we can get, you know, not overregulated and keep the activists out, I think we've got some opportunities.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Real quick, Ken McCauley, who's going to be the next senator from Kansas?
Boy, it is a tight race. But, you know, you're seeing it right now, and my pick would be Senator, call him Senator Marshall. But Congressman Marshall's got the best ag outlook for us in Kansas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Senator, we've got a battle going on in Iowa, too, here, guys. Don't lose track of that. Senator Ernst and candidate Greenfield are going at it hard. You guys, thank you so much for making time for us today. We really appreciate it. Be safe and have a good rest of the year.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, that's Darren Enan, South Dakota, Ken McCauley in Kansas. You got to come back this afternoon. Ben Cash from Bauer Trading is going to be our guest analyst. And tomorrow morning, right here on AgriTalk, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa.